The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you once again for listening. Today we are tackling kidney stones with guest expert Dr. Ramon Lopez of the USF College of Medicine. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, and which has delivered 5,000 hours of education last year, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And excuse me a moment as I take a little drink. Of water. That's a little better. Thank you. And with me today is Dr. Ramon Lopez. But before we go on with today's show, I want to once again invite each and every one of our listeners today to join us at the big Focus on Females 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium. It is March 27th, which is 2 weeks from yesterday. It's at the Convention Center, Tampa Convention Center, and it has free admission. We have 22 seminars for you that day, in addition to 8 different fitness classes, healthcare screenings, and wellness chair massages. The different symposiums, different seminars include osteoporosis, colon cancer, cervical, ovarian, and uterine cancer, migraines and headaches, skin cancer, menopause, cardiac disease, sleep disorder, breast cancer, fertility, dry eye, nutrition, cancer prevention, diabetes, bladder incontinence, raising your child without going crazy, allergies and asthma, obesity in women, screening for breast cancer, heart care and disease prevention for women, gynecological cancer, as well as looking more youthful without general anesthesia, and financial wellness. And the fitness classes include yoga, Pilates, kickboxing, Tai Chi, stretching, Zumba fitness, circuit training, and resistance training. And again, it's all free. It's all free, as well as the health screenings and the chair massages. And we're thrilled this year. We actually have 5 hospital institutions here in town that are supporting us with financial assistance And those include Memorial Hospital of Tampa, Moffitt Cancer Center, USF Health, St. Joseph's Women's Hospital, as well as University Community Hospital. So we're thrilled we have such a significant interest on just about all health medical institutions in the in Tampa, and we're very proud about that, as well as our other sponsors and so forth. So we also have exhibitors there. It's be a great day, a great event. I want to share one last bit of news before we turn to today's topic. I received an email, which I think each and every one of you would appreciate. This email was from a listener in St. Petersburg, and I want to just describe, as I read the letter, share with you the impact that our radio show has every week on listeners out there. And again, feel free to email me. You can go to the website on our website, focusonfemales.com, and you can send an email when you click the Contact Us link on the home page and send me your thoughts, comments, and even suggestions for future radio shows. I encourage each and every one of you to go ahead and do that. This particular email came just a few days ago. Dear Focus on Females, can you please help me? My sister in Gainesville has a 21-year-old daughter who has been suffering from eating disorders for several years, and she would love to order a tape or transcript or video of the recent show on eating disorders. I listened and made notes and told her what I remembered, but it would be such a comfort to her to listen to every word. It was an excellent show, as all of them are. Would you please tell me how she can obtain a tape or transcript of this show? Thank you so much, a loyal listener, Judy. And so each and every one of you should know that we post the podcasts of the radio show on the website. So if you go to focusonfemales.com, the left lower corner is a link. It'll take you right to the Radio Healthcare page. And on that page, we post the podcast from back to 2008 when we began the show. So every show is on there. It's a library of shows, and you can use them at your pleasure. I'd like to thank specifically Judy for sending me this email. It's very kind of you, and great to see that there are loyal listeners out there and that are benefiting from the work we're doing here for you. And everything we do here, whether it be on our weekly show or our annual symposium, is free for you. And we're here to identify breakthroughs for you and your family. Okay, today's show, kidney stones. And first I want to thank Ramon Lopez, Dr. Lopez, for being here with me and listening to me try to share with you the great opportunity we have in 2 weeks at the healthcare symposium. Thank you for your patience, Ramon.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
And and so let's talk about kidneys. First off, we hear about kidney stones. But we know that oftentimes, most of the time, they have severe pain associated with it, but not always. What's the big deal about kidney stones, especially in other words, the common denominator in all patients with stones, whether they're painful or not? Can it lead to progressive risks to that patient over time?
Yes, there are several things that are important. Even if the kidney stones are not symptomatic, certainly can be associated with other medical problems, can be associated with parathyroid disorders, can be associated with osteoporosis or osteopenia, can be associated with gout, obesity, and many other medical conditions that may require a thorough evaluation to exclude them.
Okay, and you know what? Before I go any further, I am remiss because I didn't read your introduction, so I will do that immediately. Dr. Ramon Lopez was born in Havana, Cuba, and moved at an early age to Puerto Rico, where he completed his undergraduate and medical school and was a member of the Alpha Omega Alpha Honor Medical Society. He completed his training in internal medicine and nephrology at the USF College of Medicine, and he is board certified and recertified in both specialties. He joined the faculty of the Division of Nephrology at USF College of Medicine in 1994, initially at Bay Pines Veterans Hospital, where he developed the renal disease section with Dr. Jacques Dour that included a clinical, research, and resident training program. He subsequently joined USF faculty in 1999 at the North Campus and is medical director at the USF DaVita Dialysis Center. He's bilingual and currently practices at Tampa General Hospital, Moffitt Cancer Center, and the Northside Clinics. Okay, and And so you mentioned that kidney disease associated with, or kidney stones associated, and kidney disease associated with a variety of medical diseases. If someone has kidney stones, can it in and of itself lead to progressive chronic kidney disease with altered kidney function?
Yeah, we see in those patients that have severe kidney stone formations, those are patients that have recurrent kidney stones. They pass them quite frequent, several times per year. You can see them on kidney stones that are associated due to infection in the urine, the so-called struvite stones. Okay. Those are quiet, can become quiet, big and large, and obstruct the urinary tract and produce eventually loss of the kidney if they don't get taken care of at an early stage.
So kidney stones in and of themselves, even those without pain, can progress to cause kidney failure. And there's association with infection and possibly, I guess, what's called urosepsis. Is that
correct? You can get infection that starts in the urinary tract. Some of the bacteria do produce substances that favor formation of kidney stones. And the bacteria themselves can translocate into the blood and produce a severe infection in the blood.
And, of course, urosepsis is potentially a lethal disease. And is it correct? Am I correct by saying that it can be difficult to treat sepsis or infection of the blood in association with or emanating from the kidney?
That is correct. Usually, when it gets to that stage, it requires not only IV antibiotics but some form of removal of the stone to remove the focus of infection. So you'd rather deal with this early than at a late stage.
It's often said that if patients with heart valve disease, if they have a procedure where you cut skin that's not clean, to take prophylactic antibiotic, do patients that have kidney stones or advanced kidney stone formation, do they need some special prophylactic antibiotic before they have a procedure in the oral cavity or some other area of the body?
They usually don't. We have patients that form this type of infection stones called struvite that we may have them chronically on immunosuppressive antibiotics to try to avoid them forming new stones. But for the other type of stones, we typically don't prophylax them with antibiotics.
Okay. And is it known how aside from the struvite stones, are there other stones that also have increased risk of infection?
Struvite has a higher risk. The other stones usually are not associated with infection, but they can become infected, especially if they have mixed composition. Mm-hmm. If they have some struvite associated with calcium phosphate or calcium oxalate, then they can become infected.
And do they become infected because of the low numbers of bacteria that are in the blood routinely or with like a skin injury, and the bacteria kind of settle on the stone and they start to proliferate? Or is there another mechanism where do we see the infection with these stones?
In some patients, you may find predisposing factors. Some patients may have congenital abnormalities of the kidney in which they have some stasis of urine that predispose them to develop infections and stones. In some of them, it's quite of a mystery. It's kind of unexplained why they have predisposition to grow bacteria along the urinary tract and form the stone.
Or how does it get there? Yeah, I mean, if it's not like a low-grade, we call bacteremia, or a low counts of bacteria in the blood, which, of course, the kidney filters all the blood. Is there another mechanism where they would get in there?
Usually, I'll give you an example. If somebody has reflux in which their ureters, the tubes that connect the kidneys to the bladder, are not tight enough, you can reflux urine back into the kidney, and you have bacteria in the bladder. The bacteria can go back into the kidney and produce a severe infection around the kidney, produces stones, and even cause systemic infection.
Excellent. And that's, I imagine, more frequently in the woman than the man.
It depends on the congenital disease. Interesting, kidney stones is one of those diseases that the men have been more predisposed to kidney stones than females for unknown reasons.
But as far as the infectious component?
In females, the females are more prone to bladder infections. That is true. They usually remain in the bladder unless they have a congenital defect, and then they may reflux back into the kidney.
Excellent. Okay, so that gives us a nice little fund of information to begin with or to continue with. How does a patient know if they have a kidney stone?
Well, first of all, if you have symptoms that may be associated, you have to look for those. And the classic symptoms are a flank pain, and This can be unilateral or bilateral. Most commonly, we see unilateral. And the pain is typically described as a colicky type of pain, like waves of pains, paroxysms of 20 minutes of pain, may radiate to the lower pelvis, may produce blood in the urine, may produce a burning in the urine or irritation in urination. And then some patients present with somewhat atypical symptoms. Instead of having a typical flank pain, they may have vague abdominal pain, discomfort. They may present with symptoms of urinary tract infections. And like you mentioned before, many patients may have kidney stones and they have no symptoms at all. They just get, you just find about them on routine x-rays that were done for any other particular reasons and then show up a kidney stone in the x-ray. An important thing always is to have an evaluation because even those symptoms, even though they're suggestive, they're not specific for kidney stones. There are many other conditions that may mimic those pains, infection in the kidney. Is a challenge for us is patients that present with chronic lower back pain, try to decide if it's coming from a kidney stone or it's coming from musculoskeletal etiology. And several other etiologies in the abdomen may mimic also as kidney stone.
Okay. And why do patients form kidney stones? A quick personal note, I had kidney stones. When I was finishing my residency in Texas, I came to Miami to interview for a fellowship, and I developed my first ever kidney stone in Miami, Florida. And I learned a lot about the fact that when you have a kidney stone, there are times that you will sign anything at the hospital, no matter what they put in front of you, because the pain is so excruciating. But at any rate, I learned quite quickly that the level of hydration and dehydration is a significant, at least for me, significant factor in aggravating a kidney stone. Would you agree with that? And if so, what other factors or what are other reasons why patients do form kidney stones?
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a major factor, and perhaps that's why we are in an area in which there is a very high prevalence of kidney stone in Florida and throughout the Sun Belt, and has been associated with the weather, obviously, in the summer, and not enough hydration from the patients. But I usually, when patients come to my office, I'll give them this example. Is imagine you are in your dinner table, and you have your glass of water and your salt on the other hand, and you start adding salt to your water, and you see that the salt initially starts to dissolve. But if you add enough salt, it's going to saturate the water, and it's going to start to precipitate into small granules. And that's typically what happens with kidney stones. Instead of the water is the urine, and instead of the salt, there are other chemicals that can also form crystals when they become saturated in the urine and start to precipitate, aggregate, and grow until they finally form gravel or stone.
Okay, and we're going to take a quick break and come back with more. Call in now with your questions, 289-1860, 289-1860. We're covering kidney stones on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. We'll be right back.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Hi, I'm Chris Gould, General Manager of Salem Communications Tampa. And if you're in media sales, maybe you've heard me talk about the workplace environment and the values that make our company a great fit for you. But let's shift gears now and talk compensation. Is the writing on the wall at your current radio or television station? Have they cut your commissions, consolidated your accounts, taken away your territory? Well, here at Salem, we haven't cut commissions or taken away one single account, and there's a good reason for that. We believe in our people, and we're finding new ways to reward our sellers with incentives and bonuses and more products than ever to sell. Plus, Salem offers great training and development and very healthy commission rates. Take charge of your media sales career and call me today, 813-639-1903. Do more than just think about it. Call now to set up your interview, 813-639-1903. Salem is an equal opportunity employer.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I wanted to remind everybody that is interested in registering or coming to our 5th Annual Symposium on March 27th. The way to do that is please register online. You go to our website, focusonfemales.com, and on the upper right hand is a tab to take you to the registration page. This way we can assure a seat in the seminars you wish to obtain. So we encourage each and every one of you to do that. Okay, we're back. This show today is on kidney stones. I am joined by Dr. Ramon Lopez, nephrologist from the USF College of Medicine. We will be soon going to Jack, who's on the line. Jack in Tampa. We'll be coming to you in a moment here. Are we able to reach Jack from Tampa, who has a question on kidney stones? Jack, can you hear us?
Oh, yes. Oh. I was just waiting. Okay.
Go right ahead.
Thanks. Presently, I am 83 years of age, and this is a two-part call, which may or may not be related. But first of all, I have a Stackhorn kidney stone.
Okay.
That's the first one. The second has to do with incomplete emptying of my bladder. As I said before, it may or may not be related. I don't know. But a little background. My Stackhorn is in the left kidney, and I've had it over, I would say, over a 10-year period of time. The size is 2.5 centimeters. I take a KUB x-ray every 6 months to track the growth of the Stackhorn, and I drink, I would say, 8 ounce cups of water daily, and I understand this helps prevent the infection. The second part of the call has to do with, as I said before, incomplete emptying of the bladder, and obviously this causes frequent visits to the bathroom. I guess the 8-9 cups of water contributes to that fact. I also take Flomax daily in the evening, in fact, which makes the flow easier. approximately 3 weeks ago, I had a parathyroid gland removed. It was a benign tumor. What I'd like to know is the removal of that gland, would it have any effect on my stack on the size? Would it make it smaller, larger, or nothing? But what effect would it have on that? And would the removal of the parathyroid gland have any effect on my kidney, which what I mean by that is the frequent trips to the bathroom due to the incomplete emptying of the bladder? And I appreciate any suggestions, recommendations regarding the two.
Thank you for your question, Jack. Excellent questions. And
yes.
good history, too.
Let me start first by the parathyroid history, which is important and relevant to the case. A very active parathyroid gland has been associated with calcium, specifically calcium phosphate stones. They don't typically form staghorn calculi, but they can, especially if it's small, like 2.5 millimeter or
centimeters.
So it was quite large. It's quite large. I'm sorry. 2.5 centimeters, quite large. You typically see those large staghorns mostly associated with recurrent urinary tract infections or an hereditary disorder called cystinuria. Now, I don't think that probably at 83 you probably have cystinuria. You will have kidney stone problems much, much earlier in life. I'm not sure, and it will be helpful if at any point you pass a kidney stone or they remove a kidney stone on you and they were able to find out, send it for analysis and find out the composition of the stone. That would be very helpful. So those conditions, the parathyroid and the staghorn, may or may not be related to one another. The other condition you're talking about is the difficulty in voiding. And at your age, you have to suspect is due to an enlarged prostate gland. And the only association that you usually see with the stone and this problem is if some patients get recurrent bladder infections because they're not able to empty their bladder well, and then the infections go back into the urinary tract, into the kidney, and get severe infections called pyelonephritis, and then that can predispose them to form struvite stones.
Okay, and tell us, Jack, do you have a history of bladder infections or kidney infections, that to your best of your knowledge? Is Jack still there?
Hello?
Jack, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, do you have a history of recurrent bladder infections or kidney infections to the best of your knowledge?
No.
And as you're 83, how long have you known you had, I said over 10, you've had stones for at least 10 years.
At least, yeah, right.
Okay. Have you ever passed a stone?
No.
Okay. And you recently found that you had elevated parathyroid.
Right, and the calcium level was, I would say, about 10. The parathyroid results, I would say, about 130, and was recommended that I have the gland removed, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if it would have any effect on the staghorn.
And the other thing that it helps you, you don't have the stone by itself to analyze the composition, and that happens on many occasions. What we can do is to analyze the probability of what type of stone you're forming. And the reason, and the way we do that is by combining certain blood tests, the calcium, the parathyroid in the blood that was, I'm sure, was measured on you, and then the solutes that are excreted in the urine. You collect your urine for a 24-hour period, and typically gets repeated 2 or 3 times. And we look at the normal chemicals that turn to form the kidney stones. We see the excretion of calcium, the excretion of oxalate, the excretion of sodium, the excretion of cysteine, uric acid, and other compounds that can give us an idea if any of these chemicals may be forming the stone.
Did you go ahead, I was going to ask you, have you had the 24-hour urine collection?
I was just going to say that. I've had it done a couple of times, and nothing was mentioned as far as anything that you're suggesting. Mm-hmm. Whether the urologist or the endocrinologist that I've seen, neither one has said anything other than what I've told you as far as what I should be doing.
Is it your understanding that all the results were normal, or was there was an elevated result?
Other than what I mentioned, the parathyroid was elevated. The calcium, to some degree, was around 10. So I don't know whether you'd call that elevated.
But for the urine collection.
I don't recall any of the physicians mentioned that that was elevated. It might have been, but I don't recall.
Because those patients that have stones from their parathyroid gland, they tend to have that calcium in the urine elevated, and that's why it's important just to evaluate the result. Another thing that is important, since that stone is so large, is if they have done any functional tests on your kidney. Sometimes when the stack corn is quite large, it may decrease function on that particular kidney. So there are some tests that can be ordered, like a renal scan, that can differentiate the function of the left and the right kidney. And I don't know if that has been done on you, but I think it will be a helpful information to have. And
a renal scan does not sound familiar, so I would say in all probability I did not have it done.
Can you describe that for Jack, renal scan?
Yes, it's a nuclear medicine type of an X-ray scan in which they will inject radioisotope in your vein that is normally secreted in the kidney. Now, that radioisotope gets distributed equally in both kidneys. So if by any chance you have one kidney that is not working as well as the other kidney, you will be able to tell it by the scan, because you will see independently how each kidney is working. These things you really cannot tell by the blood, because what happens is that even on patients that have one atrophic or damaged kidney, the other kidney takes over on the function for the poorly functioning kidney.
And so let's say that, well, that's a good point, because are you familiar with creatinine, if you have an abnormal creatinine in your blood tests, Jack?
I heard the term. I don't recall the results of the blood test, what the creatinine showed.
Okay.
So I would not be able to.
Let's assume it was normal then, Ramon. If it turns out to be less functioning in this left kidney, could that potentially cause, in other words, with that information, what would Jack be interested in? What benefit of that information to him would
there
be?
Well, that's one of the informations, that if we have somebody that has a stack corn and we're noticing they're starting to lose function on that kidney, we may try to be more aggressive in trying to remove the stone to have him recover function on the kidney, on the affected kidney.
All right.
Question. You mentioned, just mentioned removal of the stone. Now, is that through surgery, or is there my understanding is that if this stone were very small, there would be a procedure that can break up the stone.
Mm-hmm.
In the stacon that I have, being that it's 2.5, can it be broken up the same way, or do you have to perform surgery to remove it?
There's no question that large struvite stones are a little bit more stubborn to the less invasive breaking methods, like is the extracorporeal shock wave lithotripsy. Something like this usually tries to get done through percutaneous methods with assistance of the interventional radiologists and the urologists. And certainly if the percutaneous, which is a less invasive method, cannot be successful removing the stones, then yes, it will require surgery.
If there's reduced kidney function related to the stone, could that cause elevated blood pressure?
Yes, certainly every patient that loses kidney function or develops some type of renal insufficiency is at a higher risk of developing high blood pressure.
Okay. How's your blood pressure, Jack?
It's slightly elevated. I take a very low dose of lisinopril, but it's a low dose, so that's the only way I can answer your question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there any diet that Jack can follow? I know, again, we don't know what the stone composition is, but in this setting, would you advise or suggest that Jack discuss with his doctors possible diet?
If you don't know the stone composition, always the 24-hour urine results can guide you into what type of diet you should follow. There's certainly some general measures for every kidney stone former, and that is good hydration. And in somebody that has severe kidney disease, that will mean about probably 4 liquids of fluid per day.
As 4 liters of fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You have to make that much urine to dilute those chemicals in the urine. And that's granted you don't have severe kidney disease and you don't have severe heart problems, which, you know, can be a challenge sometimes into how much fluid they can take.
Right. Would you say that I'm taking now, I would say about eight cups of water.
Yeah.
Would you say at this point in time that would be sufficient?
That probably is the least amount. That equals about a 2-liter bottle of Coke, and that is the least amount, and that's usually what we recommend for people with mild problems that we may have found an asymptomatic small stone. But for somebody that has severe stone formation, you probably want to go into the higher hydration status.
It's almost twice as what he's taking now.
Yeah, I have patients, the typical patients that are the recurrent or severe stone formers, walk with a big gulp throughout the day. If they are at work or whatever they are drinking throughout the day because it's the only way they can keep up with those 4 liters. The other thing that is important is those liquids that are taken should try to be as much as possible salt-free.
Right.
Certainly the sodium, the salt in the diet predispose you at least for calcium stone formations. So you don't want to combine, take that much fluid that is going to take you over the 2,000 milligram a day of sodium that is recommended.
Right. So anything more, it should be more than the 8 cups or 9 cups of water a day that I'm taking.
Okay. And it's not easy, I can tell you. You have to be walking with your thermos or your water around to be able to get to that point.
Not only that, I'd probably have to take a portable bathroom with me.
Yeah, and I imagine with your prostate problems or your bladder problems, it becomes quite a challenge.
Okay, well, Jack, hang in there. We're going to take a quick break. And since we're covering so much of this topic with you, if you don't mind, please stay with us. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling kidney stones.
This is Hugh Hewitt. It never fails. When you shine a light on Washington, D.C., the rats scamper. And that's what HotAir.com is doing every single day. HotAir.com watches the politicians and the lobbyists 24-7, exposing the hypocrisy and the double talk. From the President's bogus healthcare summit, Robert Kim's podium propaganda, to Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, I count on HotAir.com to keep the liberals on their toes. You can, too. Log on to the number one conservative blog online, HotAir.com. That's HotAir.com.
Why does everyone mumble so much?
Restaurants are so noisy.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, please?
Sound familiar? Dr. Indira Alvarez, board-certified audiologist, can help you hear better today and change your life. I know what you're thinking, but with today's technology, advanced hearing instruments are small and discreet. Don't wait. If you're having hearing difficulties, call Alvarez Audiology for an appointment. 813-265-2255. That's 813-265-2255.
With me tonight's Florida Lieutenant Governor Jeff Kottkamp.
A lot of people around Florida don't realize the scope of the problem. 6 people die a day in Florida from the overdose and abuse of legal drugs, of prescription drugs. The drug of choice now for children are prescription drugs. This is becoming a bigger and bigger problem in the great state of Florida.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show, Sunday night at 9 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860. And everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We are joined by Dr. Ramon Lopez of the U.S. Nephrologist from the USF College of Medicine. And on the line is Jack, sharing with us, 83 years old, has a large 2.5 centimeter Staghorn kidney stone on the left kidney. Jack, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right. Let's talk more about, well, when we left off before the break, we discussed increased, we're hearing some noise, something in the background. Is that?
My wife is trying to help help me out. She's looking up some papers to determine about the creatine that I mentioned.
All right. Okay, let's go back to the show here.
And
all right, so we have hydration. You may need more, maybe twice as much hydration per day.
Right.
Oh, by the way, Ramon, any difference in where he gets his water from? Should he avoid tap water, as there may be some salts in there? Should he distilled water, or is there such a thing as non or pure water, that is to say, without salts? Or is there a place he can get that?
No, he probably can get tap water. The amounts of salt concentrations is still so low that what he drinks probably won't get him towards the limit.
Okay.
To answer that, I'm drinking a bottle of water.
Okay.
So.
All right. But that's not a big issue then.
Right.
All right. Keep your salts down less than 2,000 milligrams of sodium a day. And on break, we talked about protein. And Ramon, if you would begin the discussion on limiting the protein. First, the amount of protein you should not exceed is 0.8 milligram per kilogram per day. So the average man being 150 pounds or about 70 kilograms, that's about, 56 grams?
Yeah.
56 grams a day.
Right. Yeah, and probably the maximum will be a gram per kilo. 0.8 is in the lower spectrum of the dietary protein restriction. It certainly, the protein intake have several effects. Number one is it has, in the metabolism, is produced a significant amount of acid that needs to be excreted by the kidney. And the acid also tends to chew on the bone, buffering the bone, releasing calcium from the bone. And then that calcium gets to get excreted in the kidney.
Mm.
So certainly for calcium stone formers, for uric acid stone formers, because uric acid comes from the metabolism of the protein and precipitates in acid urine, and cysteine stone formers, in which, again, the acidity makes cysteine precipitate, and cysteine is amino acid that comes from the protein, dietary protein restriction is advisable. For the struvite stones, it's not that clear. Struvite stones tend to form on alkaline, high bicarbonate pH in the urine. So actually, one of the treatments that was used years ago, and it's still available, you just have to be careful with the side effects, is to acidify the urine to try to dissolve the struvite stones. So for struvite stones, I don't think dietary protein restriction may be that helpful.
Mm-hmm. All right, and for calcium oxalate stones, you also on break recommended a low oxalate containing diet. And again, because we're short on time, listeners can go and Google oxalate diets or oxalate free diets or reduced oxalate diets and get information there on how to do that. Any other suggestions for Jack as far as his diet is concerned?
No, but it will be a good. To be sure, and we do this for every patient, because before we give any further advice of these general measures, is to look at those 24-hour urine collection results to see if something else needs to be done specific with his diet or not.
Very good.
The 24-hour urine, I'll have to look it up to see where. I'm sure I have a copy of it. Now, when I look at that 24-hour urine results, I should be concerned about the creatine. Is there anything else?
Yeah, the 24-hour urine usually should have calcium, oxalate, and those Two, you don't want them to be high. If, okay, they're high, there is a problem.
Okay.
The calcium, there is citrate, which is an inhibitor. Those, actually, you want them to be high. And patients that have low citrate in the urine tends to form large kidney stones. So you want to look at the citrate. You want to look at the uric acid, and you want to make sure that that is low. And if it's done, you want to look at the cysteine, and you want to make sure that that is low and that the sodium is low. You have to be a little bit careful on those levels that you read, because the reference ranges are somewhat arbitrary. So certainly if the levels are above that specific range, you know that you're high on them. If you're slightly below them, even though you're in the normal range, they still may have some effect on your kidney stone formations.
Okay.
Actually, specialized labs on kidney stones now are not only reporting total amounts, but are reporting saturation of the particular chemical, because they found out that even in the normal range, there may be high saturation of particular compound that will predispose you to stone.
Okay. So I should also should take my protein should not be I should not take a lot of protein, I gather.
If you want, that's probably advisable, even though if by any chance you have strovite, is that the reason you have, it may not be that beneficial.
Okay. One more thing, the emptying of the bladder, is there anything that you might be able to recommend regarding that? Because it's incomplete emptying of the bladder, so obviously I go to the bathroom frequently.
You have to discuss with your urologist. The most likely reason at your age is prostate enlargement, and he's got you on Flomax to try to relax the muscle to improve the urine.
Right.
And I don't know if you have been on Proscar or finasteride, which some urologists will prescribe for enlargement of the prostate. And if those things are severe enough and don't get better with medication, then surgery will be the other option.
Okay, fine.
One question, Jack. Was there any effect from the parathyroidectomy, from the removal of the parathyroid, that affect the bladder emptying or the frequency of urination?
To me, it seems as if it did have a lowering effect. That is, a lowering amount of time that I have to go to the bathroom. Now, I don't know whether it's a coincidence something that's cause of the removal of the parathyroid gland. I don't know.
Ramon, if his calcium was elevated before and he had frequent trips to the bathroom, and let's say it's normal now, is it possible that the normal level of calcium may reduce the bladder contraction and frequency of urination?
Yeah. In the level he's at that he mentioned, calcium intense, usually may not affect the urine that much. But if the calcium gets elevated, which it might, because we only measure your calcium when you come to the office one time in I don't know how many months, and likelihood is that the calcium goes up and down. But when the calcium gets high, it does create dilution of the urine. You make more urine. Mm-hmm. So certainly bringing it down to normal range, it will help you to concentrate and keep your urine and decrease the amount that you produce.
Now, it still may be too frequent for you, but we're just trying to analyze why you may have identified a reduced frequency of urination.
Right. Okay.
Well, thanks very much, Jack, for sharing your story with us today on Sunday. I appreciate it, and best of luck to you.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye.
And okay, bye-bye now.
Bye now.
All right, going on to other issues. And again, we're in our last few minutes, so now's the time to call with questions. We're at 289-1860, 289-1860. Everywhere else outside of Hillsborough County, it's toll-free, 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600. Is there a family history involved? Is there a genetic predisposition, Ramon, to getting kidney stones?
Yeah, there is usually family history associated with kidney stones formers. Some of them are, which are the more rare conditions, being isolated to a gene that has been passed from family to family. And typical cases of these are cases of cystinuria, cystine stones, and you see few cases of calcium stone formations that are due to a single gene, and some cases of uric acid stone formation due to a single gene. Again, these are usually the most rare conditions. The most common conditions, you see family history predisposition, but there is no single gene that has been identified that causes it. So it becomes quite complex, probably an interplay between environmental factors and multiple gene factors that causes that predispositions within the family to form stones.
And you mentioned earlier some of the medical conditions associated with kidney stones, and I think we can repeat them here. One you mentioned as well as experienced through Jack's phone call, the parathyroid hormone, parathyroid gland. What other? And I think you mentioned also gout.
Yeah, for calcium, you have to be aware of parathyroid disease, of conditions that produces osteoporosis, of osteopenia, because the calcium just comes off the bone into the kidney. Sarcoidosis tends to produce calcium stones. Kidney problems called renal tubular acidosis. For uric acid stones, there have been associations with gout. There have been associations with obesity and even adult onset diabetes, the so-called metabolic syndrome. There have been associations with those.
Okay. And now, with a patient with having kidney stones, do they need any other further evaluation besides the basic creatinine levels to make sure the kidneys are functioning adequately? In other words, if the patient is asymptomatic and they know they have a kidney stone and their creatinine levels are normal, is there any other evaluation they need?
Yeah, let's break down into those that are symptomatic, those are easy, those that should be evaluated, and those that are at high risk of recurring stones, and those are patients that initially have, instead of one stone, multiple stones, even if they're asymptomatic, or if you repeat exercise within a year and the stones have grown in size or have increased in numbers, those should be evaluated. The patient that is found with one single stone asymptomatic, or that only passes one stone and they don't find any more on the x-rays, those are a little bit more controversial on the evaluation. And basically the argument is that may not be cost-effective to study all those patients with that single stone. The truth of the matter is even those patients with that single stones may, even in the long run, form a second one. And when they come to you, they really want to know why they formed the stone and what can be done to avoid any more. So we end up evaluating those patients mm-hmm. in similar fashion to what Jack had done.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, listening to Jack and listening to you, sounds like probably the best thing one could do if one does have a kidney stone is to save that stone for analysis.
That is very important. That saves a lot of cost on evaluation and a direct therapy. Once you get those stones, we'll send them for analysis and we'll know exactly where are you forming them from.
I want to ask Ramon, in 30 seconds, how would you like to summarize, what message would you like to leave with our listeners about kidney stones?
Well, kidney stones is a common condition, especially in the area we live. Make sure we keep ourselves hydrated. There are some things that can be done to prevent them, from diet to changing lifestyles if you're obese, to avoid the metabolic syndrome. And certainly if you have problems that you think you may have a stone or you're forming them too often, visit a nephrologist or urologist. They work in teams to try to tailor your treatment.
Excellent. Thanks again, Ramon. And again, I'd like to remind each and every one of you, now's the time. While you're participating in Focus on Females, go to our website, focusonfemales.com, and register for our big symposium March 27th. March 27th, that's two Saturdays forward. Next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic, we're tackling lymphoma. Lymphoma next Sunday. In the meantime, this is Dr. Steve Maskin wishing each and every one of you a healthy and happy week. And we'll see you next Sunday. Bye-bye.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.